Big Adventures with Brian Durker is supported by Cloud Chaser Creative and Humphrey Summit Ski. Humphrey Summit Ski has been supplying Flagstaff and the surrounding area with quality ski and snowboard equipment for the last 40 years. Humphrey Summit Ski offers quality service, repairs, boot fitting, and more, all from the friendliest staff in Arizona, on the corner of Beaver and Elm, and in Grand Canyon Spirits on Humphrey Street in Flagstaff.
Our next friend that's going to come in and sit in on this podcast, Big Adventures with Brian Durker, is Bill Gleckler. He's an old friend of mine, but he's a big name here in Grand Canyon. He's got a remarkable story as to his legacy down here, and he has an amazing ride that he's been on the last 50, 60 years. He's a lot of fun. He played the mandolin for our lead-in, and that's something we're proud of. But Bill has made his mark in a lot of different directions, and he's helped a lot of people, and he's basically helped design the modern state of affairs in Grand Canyon as far as outfitting. He's got a great family, and they're all involved with the business, and we're really lucky to have him, number one, as leadership in Grand Canyon, but number two, we're lucky to have him sit down with us right now, and let's get a load of Bill Gleckler's story. So settle in and enjoy. The whole thing that I'd like to start with is what just happened to you and me on our last river trip. And I don't think the listener quite knows what I'm talking about yet, but what that is at the end of the river season for Arizona River Runners, we have a kind of the last hiker special trip. It's a 15-day trip that is in October. And it's really heavily loaded with boatmen, and some passengers come along to pay for everything. But we have a couple dories, the Rainbow Bridge, an old dory that I own, and Bill's got the Papago, which is a dory that he has had for a long time. And then we had about 8 rafts on top of that. But what particularly is fantastic in my eyes, Bill, is you just riding this last trip. Now, Bill's a boatman from way back before all the rest of us were boatmen. He was, and we'll get to that. But on this trip, he chose to just ride in his dory with a good boatman that is just getting into the dories, Bree Short. And she's a hell of a boatman, and Babs. She's meant to be in a dory. I mean, she really is. She is a good boatman. But it still takes a certain amount of moxie in my eyes, Bill, to sit in the back of that boat through. We had some low water. We had all different kinds of conditions. What's that like?
It's really scary. That's the first thing you should need to. You know, you as a guide, you've been the guy there at the helm the whole time, all these, you know, hundreds and hundreds of trips, and suddenly you find yourself sitting. And in the dory, if you sit on the top deck, that's a wonderful view in Rapids.
And what Bill means by the top deck is you've got a small deck right up in the stern post there on the very back of the boat. And this is a 16.5-foot boat, right?
Right, right.
And so there's seats down low in the boat where you're facing, is it forward or backward?
It's facing forward.
It's facing forward.
You still see her. You're still looking forward in the boat, but you're sitting down in there, and that's where passengers would sit. But if you get up on the deck, like I said.
Yeah, the hatch deck.
The hatch deck is just the view.
Well, and from a distance, like it's etched in my mind watching you running through Hermit to where all you could really see is you, like Jesus out there, bobbing down.
Nobody's walking on water here. I'm happy to just stay in the boat, of course.
Fantastic, though.
But as far as Babs is concerned, she has a real touch for boating. And you know that, and I know that. And it was more comfortable for her, you know, to go this route. At least that's what she said going in. We had a blast, though, together. We just enjoyed the whole scene. At this point, that's a great place to for me anyway, because I'm considering, you know, one in the spring, and then, you know, maybe we won't do but one a year or something. Just really start to sit back now and let the youngins go. Go. You go.
Well, you know, it's an interesting time in all of our careers, and we've been there a really long time. But can we etch our way back into your earlier years? Like, where were you born? And
yeah, sure.
Let's start way back there.
Okie dokie. Right? Turlock, California, San Joaquin Valley. Farming, 9,000 people when I was, first living there. It's probably 70 or 80,000 now, but it's still a farm community. So started doing, my father came home one day with a work permit. I was 12 and he was so happy for me. And it gave me that. And I was like,
a permit yippee. So you could work?
So I could go to work. And so, boom, you know, you're picking berries the next week. And so you did all these farm jobs. You know, you're pitching melon, bucking hay. You're doing a lot of. And then at 14 and 15, I got a job in the bean fields hauling water pipe. So I went from hauling the water pipe to river running the very next year at 16. And it's kind of an easy decision right there. Ooh, I'll take that river thing. It doesn't pay as good, but it's really a lot more fun. And just, you know, that general sense of adventure and excitement that came with it, it overwhelmed me.
And what river? What
Stanislaus River.
Stanislaus.
It was the first one, but we ran Stanislaus and Tuolumne and American more on our own there. The Stanislaus was their little 2 and 3 day that was, and you could do it in one. But Henry did it. Henry Fellaini, by the way, was the guy that owned Whitewater River Expeditions.
Right.
I was in school playing ball with his brother. And his brother says, hey, guys, you want to go try running rivers? We go, absolutely. And then we said, what do you mean running rivers? What is that? And, you know, because we're thinking a pole, you know, a wooden raft,
standing,
you know. And
Tom Sawyer stuff.
Tom Sawyer all the way. And then, you know, you get into a lot of trouble early in your career, and we did. And one of the better ones was after the first weekend, we came back for a second weekend at a bite at this river. I dumped a good friend of mine who is not with us anymore, named Stan Jansen. Dumped him in the river, pulled him back out, and we carried on. But the boat that was with us that had two other friends, we were all on the team, you know, thing. And we didn't see them for the rest of the, for hours. And they're like, oh God. And so we hopped in the car when we got to the takeout, drove back. Well, these guys had flipped as well, put themselves in the river, left the boat, hiked up a place you wouldn't believe where they hiked. Unbelievable. They're walking up the road as we come down to the put in. They're walking up in their underwear. It's snowing. And they'd been in the river, so they had to, you know, get all their clothes off so they could dry out in the snowstorm. And that was our start. Those guys never came back.
No.
Needless to say.
That was
their first and last river.
That's what river running was for them.
That was it.
And were you able to recover their boat?
Oh, yeah. We went the very next day. Stan and I went down, got the boat, brought them out. You know, life was good again. But they had managed to get it to the shore, at least. But they were done. They were not going to carry on. And we were gone. And so they had probably several reasons to get out of there.
And so that was your long and illustrious time with Fellaini.
Yeah, 6 years.
6 years with
six
him.
Six seasons until we did made the deal with Lou Elliott of ARDA to take over the motor program for the ARDA Grand Canyon.
Relco
was the name of it. Yeah. River Equipment Leasing Company. Dennis Prescott, Rick Hill-Sammer, John Foster. And so that was the crux of it for the first year or two. And they started peeling off, you know, a little bit at a time from Relco until finally my father and Stan bought them out. And we carried on a few more years until Relco got the... got the boot out of there. The park decided no more subcontracting because we were subcontracting their permit.
Right.
And so we were.
And that was during the split up or the restructuring of Arda.
That's correct. And exactly.
Turning into Azra.
Exactly. Bob Elliott took it and from his dad and ran with this section. And then Arda remained in California, Utah, Idaho. You know, they were running all over the place.
Are they still operating,
Arda? I, as far as I know, yes, but I haven't heard nor seen. No, you sure don't. So they may have had to sell out too.
And you had the old dome out there north of town.
That was our warehouse, and we had three A-frames out back and a little dome, and that was our base for operations for the Relco years.
Yeah, that was a cool little operation.
Yeah, we were very proud of it. It was just a piece of land, and we,
Relco gets the boot, and I remember you driving buses and making things work.
Oh, gosh. I rented at least the boat to a company up in Moab that was running Cataract. And so I had, remember the blue truck we had, 2.5 ton, the center beam? So they leased that and my boats, and I would run up and do some trips with them. They were called Outlaw River Expeditions.
Yeah,
Joe Greeno was his name. And I drove a bus that we were also running as a service for now Azra to put the people in. So from Flag, we would take them up to the ferry, and then we would go get them at the other end.
Yeah.
Pick them up at the caverns and bring them back to Flag and that. So I was doing all that. Georgia went back to work. We did the Mr. Mom thing for a couple of years while she was working. I went back to school. We had kids. So it was, what the hell are we doing here? We're in trouble. And so, you know, finished the degree. You know, here's one that I'll never forget. In 1 week, because I'm subbing for the district, doing some trips up there, blah, 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 you know, and in 1 week's time, so I'm trying to get on with another company here and maybe do the teaching thing and then have summer still open. And in 1 week, I got a call from Henry Fellaini to come back and manage his company, a call from the district to come to work, and we bought Arizona River Runners, the little company.
All in the same week.
All in the same week. And it was like, oh, maybe all that stuff that we had worried about for a few years to get the degree and get back on our feet was, it was meant to be.
Apparently. Incredible.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Quite a week.
What year was that? It was
86 was when we
started
our first season with ARR, who will now celebrate their 50th year in business next summer.
That's amazing.
Yeah, between Fred and us.
Yeah, Fred Burke was the outfitter, Arizona River Runner. He is quite a character, and Carol.
Oh, big time. Big time. Yeah.
And he owned Vermilion Cliffs, which was a fantastic kind of, I think I mentioned it even in a earlier visit. He had boatmen living there in the hotel rooms, and there was the bar and then the restaurant.
Oh, it was the
same.
He and
Carol lived in the back, and that's where all true guides would meet at VC.
That's right.
In between trips.
Exactly.
Whale lived there. All the WeWo boys were there, the ARR boys. And I remember we were one time having a breakfast in the bar, and the sun's kind of coming through the end door there, and Fred comes running in, and he goes, "God damn it, Durker, your dog's killing my chickens." And I looked up, I go, "Fred, Matt wouldn't kill chickens. What are you talking about?" And right about the time I say that, she walks in and she's silhouetted in the door through the sun with a chicken in her mouth.
Had to be.
Or the chickens and Fred, the time that Carol leveled the shotgun off in the living room and shot a chicken out of the front door with a shotgun. That shook Fred up. That really shook him up. But those were the good old days.
Oh, that's for sure. Well, they, as a guide, it was idyllic. They gave you a room, so you had a place to live.
Yeah.
You got the free meals. Then you'd run your season. And then he'd work you around there. And then he'd take you on vacation at the end of the
season.
He treated him right. When we bought it and then moved it out of there.
He didn't pay him much.
Well, there you go. But they had a lot of benefits that they loved.
Oh, yeah.
So when we bought it, and after 1 year operating out of there, because we didn't want to buy Vermilion, we just wanted to do the river. And Fred wanted to sell everything. He wanted Vermilion to go with it. And so, but we didn't go there. We finally wrangled the permit, and we ran it out of there for the first season. So we get back here, and I remember Brian Hansen coming in and went, hey, Bill, what do you think is going to be your thing? They know how you're going to do this. And I pointed out all those things. You know, Brian, look, you're getting fed. You're getting housing. You get to go on vacation. I don't even want to know you. I want you to go and get these trips done and do them right and make sure that the people come out of there with that freaking trip of a lifetime.
The magic.
Thing.
The glow, magic, the hue of that, magic.
That we all know is there. Exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So it was, you know, like any time you go, I've done it three times now, where you go and grab the equipment out of a warehouse and drive off with their trucks and their equipment. And it's that's not that pleasant. Nobody's really, you know, happy during those times, except for me. I mean, it was.
I've always been happy about it myself. It's like, God, at least we have some place to be.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. It was, you know, that's been our ride. That's been a magical ride too. Like I said, even at 16, that first trip, the very first one, I was like, oh, this is the shit.
Yeah, exactly. That magic.
Oh my God.
The magic is there. That first trip, I think all of us remember.
Everybody remembers
vividly.
That. Absolutely.
That first trip.
And then you come to Grand Canyon. Henry, in the first 2 years with him, we started in 66. We ran California, and then by 67, it was Utah and California and Idaho. And then by the third year, he added Grand Canyon. And when he did, I went to him to say, hey, I'll be your guy here. And you're going to sell trips here, so I'll be your lead here. And he took me up on it, and here we are.
Here we are, and it's been quite a ride. Of all the first trips in a place that you remember, is Grand Canyon any different than any other river that you did the first time?
Well, yes.
Yeah.
Which is why I went to him and said, hey, let me do it. There's something about this place. You and I have had that discussion how many times?
Yeah, quite a few
wow.
times in a lot of different conditions.
In a lot, many, many different conditions. And every time it's the same.
Yeah.
And the result is the same. And that feeling and that sense of holy crap, it's not going to get better than this, has stuck with me. You know, it's a long time now.
Well, that's why I kind of brought up our last trip that we just did together. I mean, that was one of the best trips we've done together. And it was just a joy to be there, you know, and get to run those dories.
And that's where I was going. I've so appreciated that you've brought the Rainbow Bridge and that we could go through these last about 4 or 5 years that we've done trips with the dories and have that be the finish of the season, and to watching the Rainbow Bridge.
It's
a hoot, man. It is something else to watch go through rapids. It's a beautiful thing.
And what's unique, we'll talk a lot about dories through time here. There's different designs and stuff. And this boat was commissioned by in the early 70s by Martin Litton,
yeah.
Because he wanted to have a five-person payload of passengers on a big old boat. And it was kind of ex-nayed by the boatmen. They were used to their smaller brig-style boats that would carry four passengers. And so there was only a couple of the boats built. I guess the Necheco was the very first one built, and there were some real design flaws in that boat, and then they built the Rainbow Bridge, and this is in 1970, a guy, Glenn Wooldridge, who is the same guy that dynamited Paradise Rapid up on the Rogue River so that they could run boats through there. Famous old guy, but I think he was like 70 years old when he built it in 1970.
Oh, my goodness.
This is these were the first aluminum boats built to boot.
Yeah.
But the big difference with this boat is it's got full rocker, meaning from the bow to the stern is an arc. If you look at the profile of the bottom of the boat, excuse me. And most dories, they sweep down and then there's a flat.
Flat bottom.
6-8 feet of the bottom are flat, which makes a lot more sense as far as maneuverability and stuff. But it takes away the real extenuated rocker when you're in the waves and stuff. So it's a rare boat. It's crazy, kind of crazy to run because the deepest part of the boat is right underneath where you're sitting rowing. And it kind of does some unpredictable stuff, but it is beautiful to watch in the waves.
Oh, it's special. And it was, and then this one vision that I still have and will never lose, following you into lava on one of these trips, you know, lava, you disappear pretty quick in lava, but I'm right behind you. And I'm just at the entry when you drop through the V wave, and all I see is a single oar perfectly perpendicular to Earth, standing there. If I could have gotten that.
That would be $1 million photo. Oh, maybe.
And man, that's vivid for me. And that's that, you know, that's that sense of, that's why we're still doing it.
Here's where we're going to.
Yeah, yeah.
Actually, back to this last trip we just got done doing, we got slammed by upstream wind. It was easily a steady 40, 50 mile an hour upstream wind.
Yep.
All day, and so we'd been stroking all morning. We had camped at Lavachuar, and we finally got down to Hants, and it was still just this steady, savage wind. So we get out there, and it takes us like 10, 15 minutes to get from where we pulled in for the scout to the top of the rapid, and so it's low water, definitely a slow entry. And we go in there and darned if we didn't have a pretty good run. And I turned around and Bill was behind me about 15 feet as the wind was blowing me back and he was right there. And I don't think two dories have ever been closer.
You weren't going to lose me now.
Boy, were we ever proud of ourselves.
Yeah, we kind of were. And it was one of those, it was the only rapid I rode.
That's the thing. That's right.
Babs was doing it at Bree Short, and she was, and she just, something just cramped on her as we did the pull in. So I even pulled in to Phantom to go do the scout, and she said, as we got off, she said, I don't think I could do this. I said, well, let's go scout, we'll see, you know. So we got up there, and sure enough, she wasn't feeling good, and suddenly,
and
I'm
all
up,
of a sudden, you were.
There we go.
Next man standing.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah, and last man floating.
Which additionally is, I salute your moxie on the fact that you were riding, and then also you don't row at all, and then it's 50 mile an hour wind, and you're trying to row into hands.
And I didn't, you know, your run was better than mine. Yeah, and because I was watching yours. And trying to go places where he was going, but I wasn't going places where he was going. And I was getting knocked around a little bit, but you have to make whales rock. You know that.
And you
that
ended up exactly
and
where
that's
I
where
ended,
we
up.
Ended up. And, you know, life is right. Right. We did the salute. And downriver we go.
Now, in regards to your state of the now, what are you doing down in Costa Rica?
Okay. Yeah, we went down just for we did a 17-day trip. We were rarely off the water between the rivers and the oceans and the seas. You know, it grabbed me really hard, just like Grand Canyon did. It was something really special. Wonderful people everywhere you went. A democracy of all things in Central America. And it was just, and you felt their freedom. You felt how happy these people were. Happy people. And then you go boating on these more technical rivers. So I was kayaking along with those. And then we did some sea kayaking. And then one thing led to another. And then the Walt Garrison, Ross Garrison were down there. And the idea came up to put in, through their cousins, to put in some Spanish schools. So I invested in that. And then the idea came up, let's get a little hotel on the beach. Oh, okay. So we got a little hotel on the beach. And then one thing came to another, and Ross is a house builder, boatman / philosopher. This is a wonderful guy.
Wanderer.
Absolutely. And Walter, too. And so we went in with that. And ultimately, things changed over the years. And then I ended up just trading all of the interest that I had in those two businesses for a house that Ross was building. It's a beautiful place to go and forget it all. Not like I need to do that because I'm already in a place where I can forget it all here in the woods and down in the canyon and down in the jungle. It's, don't forget the desert.
Makes a man want to forget woo! Just hearing it.
Yeah.
You are not vested in the...
Not vested in the businesses anymore.
Now,
I do
now
rent the
school
house.
is a language school.
Yeah.
And
Spanish schools. Go down to learn Spanish in Dominical, which is a fantastic surf place.
On the Pacific
On the Pacific there, side, Pacific in the southern part of the country. And Turriaba, which is their river running season there. That you can go there. And you can go to Arenal, which is their a very famous volcano, still active, throwing out stuff. Beautiful scenes at night. Now they have individual course stuff in Arenal. And then they have, they're starting to put some classes back together in Turriaba. And Dominical, they have not only the classes, but they have a house that they've revamped as a right there on the property, looking out at the beach as the River Baru runs by. It's a fantastic place. And they also have some cabins to rent. And they're in Little Dominical. It's heaven on earth again. Once again, we've always looked for those, and they're still here, brother. They're everywhere, actually.
Yeah, they are.
They are everywhere. So
it's rich down there, and you know the ocean currents all converge there. So it's really this rich nutrients in the ocean. So
hugely, the Pacific
diversity,
side is
biodiversity up the biodiverse.
You bet.
Amazing place.
Amazing.
You guys ought to go learn how to speak Spanish down there.
You know, that's a hell of an idea.
And if we learned, we could do this in Spanish. See?
Ooh, reaching wider audience. Look how he thinks. You see? Very good.
You're a tremendous, a lot of people listening to the life that you've had would wonder about this, but you're a tremendous musician. What got you into music?
Yeah, I didn't get into a lot of the music like the friends that I've played with have. They really, their knowledge of it is vast.
Oh, yeah, we know that.
Wow. And so it was late to the game, but I was in, we worked Aspen for about 6 years of the skiing there in the winter, Georgia and I. And I saw a band called Liberty, about a 6-piece. And we watched them, and they were doing bluegrass mostly. And then they would, at the end of a song or two, they would trade instruments, and they would do another song or two, and then they'd do it again. And I thought, look at that. That's fantastic. I happened to have a friend there that had a shop selling musical instruments. So I went down, and I bought a guitar, and you know what's that 45 years later?
Off you went.
Off
yeah.
I went. And then music has a lot of the stuff that the river has for you. You know, it's an adventure for sure. It's challenging. It's very fulfilling if you can get to a certain point. And I'm very intrigued by the instruments. I don't know a lot of words really to songs. I've been in four different genres of bands for about 35 years. And it was fantastic. I loved it all. And I just went along for the ride. Whatever they'd bring in, let's play that or let's do this. And I just wanted to grow with it. And I hope not done with that, because that's a place that I could still go and maybe make a mark there.
Oh, yeah. I think you could easily go in that direction if you wanted to. Bill's a tremendous mandolin player is kind of my next subject. Bill, during this session, we're going to get him to get his instrument out, and we're going to actually manufacture our lead-in music for this show.
Well, that, so you guys have the rest of the day, I take it.
Well, we only need 15 seconds, 20 seconds
of
really
10?
Slick, slick, crisp,
I give you 10
clean
chord stuff. How's that? Thank you.
Missed that one. But that's a good river song by Garth Brooks, of all people, wrote that.
I just want to listen to it. You know, to get on a more serious side, Bill, the way we look at the world and the way that adventure has played in our lives and the way that the natural world has affected our outlook on life and the planet. Kind of in a serious note, all of us have great concerns about how, that pendulum swings back and forth as far as the powers and protections. And we're in a time right now where we're seeing some of the protected lands being reduced in size, like our Alaska oil fields, rather than being the sacred tundra or the bear's ears, or we're seeing some gains that we had taken away, and that's one swing of the pendulum. Is there hope that that pendulum will swing back? And what's your take on our world as we sit in it today?
You know, I just had a short conversation today with Georgia and Sarah about that, where way back when I first got into river running, to me, anonymity is its own reward. And I thought that right from the beginning of river running. And then I realized along the way that, yeah, but you know, you got to get out there and mix it up if you really want to make a living or make some money or, you know, that sort of thing. But now that we've gotten to here, I realize, no, anonymity is its own reward. It's because if you have to throw yourself out into a world, it's the hate factor has gone off the charts. And you're like, whoa. And we live in exactly the opposite way. We are so far swung over there to that point of that love and liberty that we get to laugh, especially out of our community, that you get to have, and you get it every day. And you do that with music, and you do that with your family and your kids and your grandkids. This
and
is
your activities. This is,
oh my God, every day. And so that's the life that I've known and had. And I look out and I go, boy, this, will it swing back? Of course it will. Of course it will. We were talking about this when we got the current president. And they said, oh my God, and they were really stressing. I said, don't worry, this thing swings, and it swings wide sometimes. It swung pretty wide here. And now, don't worry, the next one will be a socialist. You know,
what's in the future? Like, I know you, and I know that there's going to be an element of philanthropy left in you. You might not have 5 or 6 river trips a year, but you definitely will have philanthropy in mind to a degree. If you were going to do something to project what we have gotten out of the adventure and out of the natural world, do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, you have to pass it on. And the place to start is first is in your own community. You know, we did this thing with the Park Service because we are all there. And there's nothing like the people that are there to see what's on the ground that's damaged or not, or is pristine or not, and how we could help it, that have opinions of how we could make it work. So you got to start there. We did a lot of stuff in the community too, with my kids at certain schools that they went to. We helped out with various programs and things, and this community as much as we could. That you have to start at home and your home river, and you have to go out there and you have to clean it up first of all, because we're not respecting it enough. That's clearly not happening. And so if we lose that at between 7 and 8 billion and counting, then whoopsie, we're going to make a big mess of what is truly a wonderful planet offering so much. And there's all sorts of things, but it takes the right people with the right focus and not just about the money. You know, lots of people made more money than us. Lots and lots and lots of money too. But where are they putting that? Into some really good things. But to go back to where you were saying when they, like at Bear's Claw, where they took some land back, that the reason that's a bad move is wildlife needs ground. It's just the most important thing. They need what they used to call free corridors, which we have contributed to in many cases. But the more you take that land back and offer it up to people, well, they suffer. All other species, all of them, suffer because of that. So you have to get, and we've done, I think this country's done a great job with its park service and all of that other stuff. And, you know, Bear Wreck and Forest Services and all of that. I think that those guys are sincere. I've played music for many, many years with a guy that was with Forest Service, just fantastic human being. Paul Weber's his name.
Yeah.
And he's really sincere. He's retired now, but very sincere about how he took care of the rangelands and everything and how he put together programs that would help sustain things. That's the key. We have to get back to that, sustaining it all. And what bugs me the most is we have all these resources that we could put towards making fresh water, that we could build electrical plants that would be not throwing stuff into the air. Well, all of that is here right in our hands. We have all the technology. We just don't have the commitment. The politicking right now is
well, so much
stupid.
Of it, I think you're really striking it right. You know, you think about the money thing or the whole, well, let's take the Front Range, Alaska. You have this delicate permafrost and this delicate landscape that is already going through some difficult times in regards to global warming, which is a conversation all its own right there.
Mm-hmm.
But then you open up that, you go in there, pull a bunch of oil out for the dollar, and then you leave and probably don't clean anything up. It's already destroyed something that you won't get back. And then the dollar will be spent someday. And then so you don't have it anymore. Where if you maintain that place, it's so much more important than that dollar was.
Agreed. And that's, science is wonderful. Outfitters, But the guiding community, that's the group. That's the one to draw to. When you think about their sense of love and dedication to these kinds of places, when they bring that love and laughter in there, and then we're dancing in the moonlight along the riverbank because we brought our instruments and life. I mean, we just went through that on this last trip.
It's a beautiful thing.
Where two trips double camped, and then suddenly you had a six-piece. And the dance ensued. And the guy that was at the lighting, Mr. Brian Durker, did a fabulous job on lighting
nice,
that night.
Well, you know, the canyon at night when it's dark, it gives you great opportunity to use the old tool that caveman used as well. We call it fire. And you can really do some creative stuff with the backdrop of the canyon.
Oh, absolutely true.
And there's something that's important about that yellow flickering flame. The human spirit is drawn to it.
Truly.
And so it was a beautiful scene.
It isn't just drawn to it, it's raised by it.
Yeah.
You know, that's the essence of this place. It stirs that soul. You just want more. And then the spirit gets involved. Now it's charge, you know, here we go. Go get them, you know, kind of a thing. That's what this place delivered. And our luck has been that we were there from the beginning of the commercial scene, and we got to watch it for 54, going on 55 years now.
We've had a pretty good run.
And the run is, oh my God.
Well, with that, I want you to think about doing two trips next year. I mean, we'll get to that in a more of a private setting. But thanks so much for giving us your time.
Oh, absolutely.
We're going to turn this thing off and then turn it right back on and grab just a couple little twangs on that instrument of yours.
Okay.
But thanks so much, Bill.
Well, thank you, too. Good to meet you. I hope that you guys make a wonderful thing from this and it all works out for you.
Well, it's going to, and you're going to be a big reason it does.
I'll get a check.
No, but we would like you to sign this waiver.
Always comes to the paperwork. Okay. Man.
I love you, brother.
I love you too, man.
Take care.
So don't you sail upon the shoreline, sail satisfied. Choose the chance, the rapids, to dance the tide.
And I will row my vessel till the river runs dry, like a bird upon the wind. These waters are my sky. I'll never reach my destination. Even if I will sail my vessel till the river runs dry.
Big Adventures is produced by Brian Durker, Margaret Knight, and me, Gavin Buchner. Bill Gleckler and his mandolin provide our music. If you like our show, please subscribe on whatever platform you listen to podcasts.